This is a presentation from Narara Valley Baptist Church, a church that's desperate for God and passionate for people.
Good morning. How are we going? That's good. That was a pretty good response. Good engagement. Well, if you were here last week, or if you weren't here last week, I'll tell you what happened, so you don't have to worry. There were plates with sandwiches on either side of the room. Craig had organised. Even though the passage he was preaching on technically didn't have any food in it, just a literary device called a mark and sandwich. This morning I'm talking about a passage that centres around food, but I did not prepare any sandwiches, I am sorry. However, if you have brought any fish or loaves, we only need a very small number. So please bring those to the front. And I can't make any guarantees, but we'll see what happens. This miracle, which we're going to be looking at this morning, is recorded in all four Gospels, and we're in Mark chapter 6, if you want to open up your Bible or your device, continuing our sort of journey through the book of Mark. But this is one of Jesus' classic hits. It's one of the only events that's recorded in all four Gospels, one of the only miracles. And I kind of think that it is at such a heightened level of out-of-this-world miraculousness that it can be kind of tempting to wonder if it has any relevance to our lives today. It seems like a cool story, but I don't know how many of us have the opportunity to feed a crowd of 5,000 or to participate in anything like that during the week. So there might be some temptation to kind of just, you know, mentally drift. But I really believe that God would speak to any of us this morning who would want to hear what he has to say. So are you ready? You listening to the voice of God? Not the voice of Will, that's less significant, but hopefully the Spirit can do something with these words between when they leave my mouth and reach your heart. So let's read Mark chapter 6 from verse 30. The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, the story begins with some hunger, he said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. By this time it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. "This is a remote place," they said. "There is no Macca's nearby, and it's already very late. Send the people away so that they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." But he answered, "You give them something to eat." They said to him, "That would take more than half a year's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat?" "How many loaves do you have?" Jesus asked. "Go and see." When they found out, they said, "Five and two fish." Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Taking the five loaves and the two fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people. He also divided the two fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of the men who had eaten was 5,000. And it is implied that there are more than 5,000 because there would have been women and children there too. People estimate around 8,000 people would have been fed, which is the population of Narara. Narara has around 8,000 people. So just imagine every person in Narara this morning getting fed from five loaves and two fishes. But let's just go back to the beginning. We're just going to kind of journey through this. But it starts basically with the disciples coming and reporting to Jesus about what they've been doing, and they're excited and they're kind of maybe a bit, you know, sort of trying to get the word in around this cool thing happened and we went here and we taught and this, we saw this and, you know, we're hungry, there's just so much happening. And right at the beginning, Jesus says these remarkable words. These are incredible words, I think, to come out of the lips of Jesus, and maybe they are words some of us need to hear today. Jesus says, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. What a beautiful invitation. I don't want us to just skip past this to get into the rest of the story. Maybe some of us need to hear those words today. Jesus, our rabbi, our teacher, says these words to us. He says things like, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. If that's all you need to take from this sermon and you just need to sit in those words and meditate on those, I give you permission to just ignore the rest. But I think it's awesome that when we come in our busyness and we're excited and we're talking about what we've been doing, what we've been achieving, what's been happening in our life or our ministry or our work or whatever, sometimes Jesus just says, hey, just come. Let's go somewhere quiet and get some rest. I know I need to hear those words and listen to them and pay attention to them. But then this kind of comical thing happens. I call it the boat versus foot race. Because basically, Jesus and the disciples get in the boat. They're starting to go across the lake. Maybe he knows, you know, a quiet Airbnb across the way. They can go for a little retreat together. And the people around kind of catch word of what's happening and they run around the lake and they run faster than the boat. It seems like comical to me. It seems sort of like first century paparazzi, you know, sort of racing around to where Jesus is. And this growing crowd, it's like an avalanche of people, you know, the whole of Narara suddenly is running around Brisbane water or whatever. But the bottom line is Jesus and the disciples get there. And this beautiful invitation of rest is very quickly interrupted. How would you feel at this point? I mean, I would just feel like people are needy and annoying and get out of my face. Just hanging out with Jesus, just the intimate crew here. We're going for a little weekend away together. Go away. But Jesus doesn't respond like this. He responds by having compassion for the sheep without a shepherd. We read in verse 34, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Which I find really interesting because Jesus is the one who initiated this little getaway. Jesus is the one who said, enough busyness, let's go somewhere calm and quiet. And then he is the one who has compassion when this needy, large crowd of people come chasing after him. They're desperate for Jesus. And he responds with compassion. What is the nature of this compassion? What does it mean to be sheep without a shepherd? Well, you may have noticed if you've been reading through the Bible at all during your life that sheep are kind of referenced a little bit in relation to God. And there's this ongoing, recurring kind of relationship between the sheep and the shepherd. And sheep, most of us probably don't have much interaction with sheep. I mean, there's a school near my house that has sheep and goats out the front. Love to take the boys for a walk and go and look at the sheep, which is cool. But basically, sheep are ultra-dependent creatures. Sheep left to their own devices can easily just wander away. They can find themselves in places without food and starve. They can find themselves in danger of being eaten by wolves. They're not really that smart. They are ultra-dependent. And there's this recurring metaphor in the Bible that that the people of God are like sheep. And without a shepherd, we wander away, we get in places that aren't good for us, we make bad decisions, but we have a good shepherd. And Jesus, the good shepherd, sees this crowd of people like sheep without a shepherd and he wants to take care of them. And there's this really interesting little echo, actually, of a sentence in the Old Testament in the book of 1 Kings, chapter 22. There's this little sentence in there, a prophet named Micaiah is speaking to a king, and he says, I saw all Israel scattered on the hills like sheep without a shepherd. And the Lord said, these people have no master. Let each one go home in peace. I find that a really interesting little sentence there. One, because Israel are like sheep without a shepherd. And so when Jesus sees this crowd, they are representative of Israel. And Israel are representative of humanity. Israel are the first ones that God reveals his great love and faithfulness to, but ultimately God wants that for the whole earth. And so in this sense, When Jesus sees the sheep and there's this echo of a passage in the Old Testament talking about Israel. That's all of us, right? We are that crowd. We are that crowd that are lost like sheep without a shepherd. But that verse I just read as well finishes with this idea of these people have no master, let each one go home in peace. And that's exactly the opposite of what happens when Jesus has compassion on this crowd. He doesn't send them home. That's what the disciples want to do. But Jesus says, no, come in, come and sit. Let me teach you, let me feed you. Come and be with me. Let me be your master, your rabbi, your shepherd. Jesus doesn't just settle for seeing the people, feeling sorry for them and sending them away. He takes care of them. And I think it's kind of a beautiful image, actually, because we're told that they sit in these groups on the grassy hills. And you can kind of imagine like the sheep on the hills, this large group of people, and the good shepherd is with them, feeding them, protecting them, taking care of them. But there is this tension point in the story. Jesus has compassion, which is lovely. That's very, very nice and sounds warm. But there are 5,000 plus people. There's like 8,000 people in this lonely place, is how the disciples describe it, this place without food. And I was kind of thinking, I was trying to think in my head, like it's hard to imagine that number of people. But my closest sort of mental scenario was a festival. I don't know if anybody here has been. The Central Coast has some great festivals now. In Wyong at the beginning of the year, there's a festival called Love Lanes Festival. It's a laneway festival. They close down the roads. They have around 5,000 people. Or there's been the Long Jetty Festival over the last few years. Or, you know, there's a Harvest Festival recently. But festivals are kind of the place where you see large crowds of people. However, festivals have like food trucks and all sorts of, you know, organization that has been done to take care of that many people. So this scenario in my head is 5,000 people at a festival with no food trucks. Doesn't sound very fun. And there's this tug of war between Jesus' compassion and the disciples kind of pointing out, well, actually, there's a lot of people and there's just no way to feed them and it's getting dark. No one has organized this. This was not a planned event. So we need to do something about this. It kind of feels like on the one hand, Jesus is idealistic, and on the other hand, the disciples are being realistic. And I don't know where you lean during your normal life. I'm probably a pretty idealistic or optimistic person, but you can see there's a real tension here between, well, it would be nice to help these people, sure, but let's be practical, Jesus. It's just, we do not have the facilities for that. And I think the miracle occurs in the middle of these two extremes of idealism and realism. I think the miracle occurs when Jesus invites his disciples to just proceed as if there will be enough, to just love as if there will be enough. Let's ask questions later, but let's just step in to what we feel that God is leading us into as if there will be enough. I don't know if you've ever had to do this in your life, but I feel like there's definitely been times in mine and Sam's relationship where we have felt compelled to do something for people. We've felt the need to practically love some people, and yet we've also felt like maybe that would stretch us a little too much. And yet we've often found that when we love, when we give, when we show hospitality, as if there will be enough, we can get pretty surprised at how far things go. I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but I think it's a beautiful principle that before Jesus explains what's going to happen, he just invites them to participate and trust that there will be enough. So I say to you and to me, how about we live lives that love as if there will be enough and see what happens along the way? We might be pleasantly surprised. So how do we do that? Well, the first thing I see here is that Jesus is interruptible. And I think one thing that we need to learn how to practice is to become people whose lives are a little bit interruptible. If I'm honest, I try to live my life in a pretty focused and planned way. I have numerous roles and responsibilities to juggle, and I take time management pretty seriously. And so often, the dark side of that is that I am not very interruptible. If I am in the zone and focused on something, and you're trying to tell me what you did on the weekend, I'll just nod and smile, but I'm not really with you at all. Anyone relate to doing this to people, not being very interruptible, or just feeling like if that crowd comes, those needy people come, someone wants something, you just feel like frustrated, go away, I don't have time for you right now, I don't have mental capacity for you right now. But Jesus is clearly interruptible, and the needs of others are not a source of frustration to him, they are an invitation to be moved by compassion. And I often think, I guess really the things I'm focused on, the things that I get really, you know, like in my head about, are ultimately supposed to be for people. And yet along the way, I often miss the people. And the mission of Jesus was to the people. So he doesn't see these people as an interruption. He goes, this is the whole point, is to be with people, to love people, to teach them about the kingdom of God. So maybe some of us need that reminder. But there is a big but here, and I want to give you a bit of a caution around what I see as the biggest risk in reading this passage badly. I think there is a way to read this passage and to create grounds for very unhealthy people pleasing and allowing the violation of boundaries that should be in place. And I think it's really interesting to come back to the idea that Jesus starts this chapter with an invitation into rest that recognizes there's been too much activity, there's been too much busyness, there's too much go, 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 come and rest. So I think that's important. But then as soon as this interruption occurs, it seems like Jesus just throws that plan out the window. I find that kind of confusing. And I feel like we could look at this and go, well, if you start to rest or you start to, you know, take care of yourself, as soon as somebody interrupts you, you just do whatever that person wants. I feel like we could read this in a way that we put unhealthy obligation and pressure and we kind of, we give permission for people to continue just being people pleasers when it's not the healthy thing. So what's going on here? Well, I think it's really, really important not to miss that Jesus doesn't feed the people because he feels guilty or obligated or he needs to get his sense of worth from performing a miracle. It's really important to note that Jesus feeds the people because he is moved with compassion, with a deep and genuine sense of love. And I've found really helpful as I've been thinking through this sermon, the work of Brené Brown. Not sure if any of you are familiar with Brené Brown. She is a researcher who primarily spends her research life looking at shame. And she's famous for a TED Talk. It's one of the most watched TED Talks on vulnerability. And it's worth checking out if you haven't seen it. But one of the most surprising insights that she's discovered in her years of research, and she speaks about this as something that shocked her, but it's come out of research, it's come out of 13 years of interviewing people, she discovered that the most compassionate people, the people who have the deepest and widest capacity for compassion, have the strongest boundaries. The most compassionate people are the most boundaried people. They are the ones with the strongest sense of what is okay and what is not okay, and what I will say yes to and what I will not say yes to. And when I show compassion, it is out of a free yes that is given within the framework of my boundaries. And it's research-based. It's not just like Brené Brown had a gut feeling. She was shocked by it, as perhaps you are, as I was. But when I look at Jesus, I think this totally makes sense. I think Jesus is only interruptible, is only able to act out of such deep compassion because he is totally in control of his boundaries. If you read through the Gospels, you will notice how often Jesus slips away from the crowd at the opportune moment to heal people or feed people or to become king. He just slips away from the crowd whenever he wants to. He refuses to be put into the boxes that people want for him or to conform to the answers they want him to speak or to be put on the kind of platforms they want to put him on. And if you actually look at the verses straight after Jesus has fed the 5,000, verse 45, check this out. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd. After leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. So after this spontaneous interruption, he immediately sends his disciples to go and continue to get that rest. And then he himself goes up on a mountainside to pray. Jesus is very in control of his boundaries, of his rhythms, of the things that keep him connected to the Father and keep him healthy. And those are deeply important. And compassion flows out of that health, out of that boundaryness. Is that making sense? I reckon that's a bit of a game changer. And if I was to put it to you this morning, if I was to ask you, if you just assume for a moment that your ability to show compassion, to be healthily interruptible, to be able to help people in need is directly wrapped up with your boundaries, with your ability to freely say yes or no, not because you feel pressured or obligated or just want to please people. If that was the case, how well do you think you are currently set up to show compassion? If your ability to show that kind of love that people really need is directly wrapped up in how clear your yeses and your nos and the edges of your boundaries are, how well do you think you are currently set up to show compassion? Maybe some work to do for some of us. So if you are boundaried and you are interruptible, I think there's really only one more thing to remember from this story. It is to trust the good shepherd who can make a way through the impossible. And I find it really interesting that Jesus says, "You feed them," to the disciples, but then he is absolutely involved in what happens next. He doesn't say, "You feed them," and then just walk off. He says, "You feed them," and then they bring what they have to him, and he breaks the bread, and he gives it to them, and they participate in the distribution, but it is Jesus who multiplies it. And this is really important, because the role of Jesus is the miraculous. The role of Jesus is the feeding of the 5,000. The role of the disciples is to just bring what they have and participate. You don't have to do crazy miracles or multiply, you know, little things into big things. You just bring what you have, trust the good shepherd, love as if there will be enough, and watch what happens. You don't have to drum up the impossible. You just have to come with what you have. And I think Jesus' broader gospel ministry is the good shepherd making a way through the impossible. This is the whole thing, right? Is God coming to earth, coming where there is brokenness, coming where there is death, coming where it seems like there will never be reconciliation. And through his life, through his death, through his grace, through his resurrection, he makes the impossible possible. He makes relationship with each other and with God and with the land on which we walk possible again. So my friends, we do not have to feed 5,000 people with 5 loaves and 2 fishes, but we are invited to participate in this amazing, multiplying, miraculous movement that is empowered by the living Spirit of God. And when we show up, when we have healthy boundaries, when we create an interruptible posture, and we allow compassion to be what interrupts us, what kind of amazing things could happen? And so this morning, I want you just to ask yourself the following questions. Are your boundaries clear? Are you in control of your yes and your no? Are you able to say when it's time to go and rest or when it's time to engage? Are your boundaries clear? Second, are you interruptible? When you're living in a healthy rhythm, do you allow the interruptions of life to stir you to compassion? Are you so planned out that you miss the people that right now, right in this moment, God might be calling you to pay attention to? Third, are you trusting the Good Shepherd? Are you worrying about the resources that you have, or are you trusting that if God is calling you to love, He is the Good Shepherd that will provide a way? And if you can answer all those questions, if your boundaries are clear, if you're interruptible, and if you are trusting the Good Shepherd, then may you join in with His generous, abundant compassion. Trust His incredible provision and love as if there will be enough. And when you live like that, 5 loaves and 2 fishes can go a pretty long way.
This has been a presentation from Narara Valley Baptist Church, a church that's desperate for God and passionate for people. To continue the conversation, we invite you to join us Sundays at 9:30 a.m. and 5 p.m. or on our website at www.nvbc.info.